Hi, I'm Dora from Dora Nicolau, and my drink of choice is a chai.
I'm Gemma from Contently Driven, and my drink of choice is red wine.
And I'm Mikala from Inspired Office, and my drink of choice is a sparkling white wine.
Work-Life Wine Time supports the responsible consumption of alcohol.
Hello and welcome to episode 94 of the Work-Wife Wine Time podcast, the podcast for Australian women in business who are looking for connection and the support of other women who are sharing the same business journey. You've got Mikala here with you today, and I'm really excited to connect you with our guest, Jo Wagstaff, who is a leadership coach, speaker, and author of a brand new book, Lead Like You. So, Jo, thank you for being here. I'm so happy to have you on the podcast today.
Oh, it's such a pleasure. I'm really looking forward to this conversation.
Fantastic. So to start us off, can you tell us a bit more about who you are and exactly what it is that you do?
You know, I think that answer changes almost every time I'm asked that question. So what I do now is I work with executives, either in large corporates or in entrepreneurial businesses, as a leadership coach. So my focus is on helping them to grow and develop themselves as leaders so that they can be the best version of themselves and lead and inspire the teams that they work with. And as I said, I do that with large and small businesses. I do a lot of work with large businesses across Australia, New Zealand, but also across Asia. In the last few years, I've done a lot of work across Asia. And my great passion is working with women, because I made almost every mistake you can possibly make, I think, in my career. And I like to sort of support women to do it differently to how I did it as part of that.
Fantastic. And can you tell us, like, how did you get to where you are now? Like, what did you start doing career-wise, and what led you to starting and running your own business?
I never thought I would run my own business, actually, when I think back at it now. So I was very ambitious from a young age. I think that kind of ran in my family. And so I stepped into the financial services industry quite young, from about the age of 23 when I got back from overseas. And I worked super hard and was super driven. And I talk a lot in my book about some of those overdrive behaviours that and kind of people-pleasing behaviours that had me get, I achieved a lot. You know, by the age of 30, I was sitting in a senior executive role on a leadership team, the only female on a leadership team. And so I had a lot of success in my career early. In fact, I got to the height of my success that I thought would be where I would finish my career, actually, at a really young age. And it was at that point, and again, I sort of tell this story of I was working with in a business that was run by James, or was James Packer was the major shareholder at the time. And we had a cocktail party, a welcome cocktail party at his house or his apartment. It was like a house apartment over in Bondi Beach. And I remember being there and being the only female executive in the room, and him taking me for a tour of his place and then showing me the powder room, which was the size of my bedroom. But I remember vividly, it was such a pivotal time in my life, looking at myself in the mirror and thinking, wow, like, you've got everything that you ever thought would make you happy and successful. At the time, I was married to an investment banker. I had a 14-month-old son. We lived in the North Shore in a big home that we were building. And, on the outside, I drove a BMW. I had all the fancy clothes. And from the outside, you would have thought I would have been the happiest woman alive. And in that powder room, I really saw, for the first time looking back at me, was someone that was actually deeply miserable, really sad, and feeling really alone. Because I think I was trying so hard to be what I thought the world wanted me to be successful, that I'd kind of lost lost who I was in that and what was actually important to me. That was a really big year for me. My dad died of cancer. My marriage ended. I talk about the book that my way of kind of dealing with that grief and uncertainty and stepping out of my corporate career. You know, I turned to substances and I kind of went off the rails, which was a big thing because I was very square. Like I was a very proper, what I would have said, a very proper person. So it was a big surprise. And in fact, nobody really knew what was going on behind the scenes for me at that time. But from a career perspective, I really went on a deep personal journey. And then once I came out of that, if there's such a thing, and I sort of said, all right, what do I want to do now from a career perspective? The idea of going back into a corporate organization and losing myself again and burning myself out again was it was a no-go. I was like, no way am I going anywhere near corporates again. What I will do now is I'll work for myself. But, you know, you know, I'm sure, and probably many of our listeners know, we take ourselves with us no matter where we go. And mm-hmm. So this idea that I would start my own business and I'd live this really easy life and very flexible, which it is, I do love the flexibility of my own business, was not quite the fantasy I thought it would be. And it was a hard slog for those first couple of years to get my business generating enough income to support me. I was a single parent, a single mum at the time. And so, you know, there was a lot of stress that kind of came with that. But I did know that I needed and wanted to do something that was really fulfilling and that was very relational and something that I could continue to grow in, but where I could also really be of service to others in that work. And there's a whole story around how that kind of did and didn't work. But what I did notice is I took all my behaviors with me. So I still overworked. Yep. I still didn't hold my boundaries. And so the big shift for me was I realized that the way I was working needed to change. It wasn't actually whether I was in a corporate environment or a small business environment. It was about how I worked, how I showed up to work. Mm-hmm. And that's and so now I work in both, you know, large businesses and small businesses, predominantly around that same thing. Because a lot of women I work with say, oh, well, I'm going to just leave the corporate world and go and start my own business. And I'm all for that if that is ultimately what is calling to them. But my questions are always around, and my coaching is always around, yeah, but what is actually going on for you in that? And can you do work differently in this business before you make the decision to go and do another business?
Yeah. Yes, I love that. I absolutely love that. Because, yeah, I did the whole work myself to the bone in a job, start my own business, work myself to the bone.
Yeah, exactly.
Do that. And now I've found a nice mix because I work a corporate job 3 days a week and have my own business 2 days a week, but they're very much aligned. But yeah, it's because I only just started a new job and it's been interesting kind of coming in there and working out the lay of the land and the culture and how I'm going to enforce my boundaries that yeah. I had to develop to be able to not kill myself in my business.
Yeah, totally. So, you're not alone in that, hey?
No. So, Jo, the main reason I wanted to have you on the podcast today was to talk about this idea of redefining success. Because I think that's so important. And you do it, you talk about it so beautifully in your book. So can you start a bit by giving us a bit of a background into that, redefining success and what it means and why it's important?
Mm. You know, what I recognized in myself and in so many of the women, and I'll talk about women here, but honestly, they're quite common denominators in men as well, and I work with a lot of men too, is we don't often take time to stop and really think about what success means in all aspects of our lives. Mm. So I see many people who who are super successful, inverted commas, in their careers, and their marriages are falling apart, or they have, you know, bad relationships with their children, or they or their health is, you know, really, you know, not good.
Yeah.
And it's been such a fascinating thing for me in my own life, as well as watching others, to see us go after what I think society tells us looks like success on the outside, but in that kind of limit what success could look like for us, or more importantly, just ask the question. Because if the answer to the question is, well, that's okay, I don't care about these other things as much, and actually what I need to do, and, you know, my partner and I have decided that my focus is on bringing in the income, and I'm going to focus 100% on my career and getting up the ladder and doing that, and then if that's a conscious decision that you make, that's okay. But what I see over and over again is we're not making conscious decisions about these things. We are getting caught up in what we think life is meant to look like, and or the pressure. And, you know, you just mentioned you walked into a new corporation, there's a culture in there, there's a pressure that almost instantly comes on around how other people are working. Oh, am I going to be okay? Am I going to be able to keep my job if I work within my boundaries? You know, like there's all these kind of either conscious or unconscious beliefs and fears and anxieties that run our behaviors day to day. But I really get that the quality of our future depends on the choices that we make now. Yeah. And there is no point in sitting back in 10 or 20 years' time and going, I wish I had done it differently, which I think many people can do. And so my encouragement and what I like to do is invite people to really think about what life success looks like and what are the areas of your life. You know, I tell this story, I always think of this woman, and I tell this story in my book of this beautiful client of mine who is very good at what she does, works incredibly long hours. She has three young children and a husband. And when I asked her, what did life success look like for her? She said, oh God, I don't know, I've never really thought about that. She said, I just want a simple life. I want to be a really yummy mum with my kids. You know, I want this really beautiful relationship with my kids. I want my husband and I to be more connected than we are. We're not really very, we don't feel very connected. We're kind of running two different lives at the moment. I do want to do a fulfilling career. She said, I do that. That's definitely important to me. I want to feel like I have kind of purpose and fulfillment through the work that I do. But when we looked at kind of the behaviors on a day-to-day basis, where her focus went on a day-to-day basis, it wasn't on nurturing those relationships with her kids. It definitely wasn't on nurturing that relationship with her husband. Exercise and her kind of health and well-being tended to go out the window a lot. And so work just took over. It just took over. And we can do that week in, week out, month in, month out, year in, year out, and then all of a sudden come up for air and wonder why our marriage ends, or wonder why, you know, we're not connected to our children, or wonder why our health isn't good. And yet it's not really a surprise. It's just we haven't kind of consciously taken time to stop and create the space for what really matters to us.
I've had a lot of conversations with people around that, like, you know, what do you actually want? I often pull up my clients and just anyone I'm talking to. And I find that, you know, when you ask that question, it often is that it's at odds with what they've currently got. But the struggle that, like, I find a lot of people have is that, but how do you then align things with what it is that you want? Like, how do you, you know, we kind of get stuck in the rut of, well, maybe I don't want to work so much, but I kind of got to work so much because it's the lifestyle that I've created that relies on the income. Like, how do you help people to, I suppose, commit to the changes that are needed?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I think it's really complex. And I think there are, for some people, big decisions that need to be made.
Yep.
So it might be, well, I've got a $1 million mortgage and I need to downsize because I don't want that pressure. So they're big life decisions that as a family, you know, they may need to commit to. But for many, it's small decisions. Mm-hmm. It's about how we show up to the work that we do. And so, again, if I go back to this example of this woman I was talking about earlier, you know, what she recognized over time was the more she started to hold the boundaries. So, for example, she committed to a morning routine for herself. She had a couple of days a week where her husband committed to looking after the kids in the morning and she did what she needed to do in terms of her exercise. And she found that just that alone cleared up her health, her headspace. It allowed her to manage her anxiety better because she was running on a lot of adrenaline and anxiety. Mm. And she started to create a morning ritual, sometimes, as I said, with the help of her husband, but other times it was once she kind of dropped the kids off and got them all sorted before she started her day. In the office, she would spend half an hour just kind of sitting down, settling herself, making a list of priorities, getting clear on what she needed to get clear on. So as counterintuitive as it sounds, a lot of the time it's just about slowing down. You know, we run hard, particularly yes. as women, yeah? And it feels really unnatural to slow down. It's like, how can I slow down when I have got so much going on?
Mm.
Oh, it's so counterintuitive. But actually my experience within myself and with others is the more we can slow ourselves down and our nervous systems down, the more present, less overwhelmed, we make better choices for ourselves and for others. We show up with more presence to whatever it is we are doing. And we've all got the stories where we are kind of either on the phone or thinking about work while we are talking to our children or, you know, so this inability to be kind of fully present to whichever part of our lives we are focused on because we're overthinking. And a lot of that comes from understanding what is driving us, what is running us, what our anxieties are. And, you know, I talk a lot of in the book about how our histories and the beliefs that we set up in childhood around how we are going to unconsciously get our needs met often drives those behaviours. Well, you know, and I really hear you around that this is the lifestyle I have set up for myself, and so I have to work hard to continue that lifestyle. And as I said, there's two choices in that. Either I change that lifestyle, or how can I maintain that lifestyle but do it from a different place within myself? So rather than doing it from a place of, you know, the internal pressure that I think we put on ourselves is one of the most painful, and recognizing the pressure that we put on ourselves or we allow other people to put on us. But at the end, we are allowing that. That is our choice. Is a really important part of knowing ourselves. And I don't think we can find kind of deep fulfillment and kind of like some level of satisfaction unless we really know ourselves and what is driving us.
Mm. Absolutely. In you saying that, you actually made me think of something that you wrote in the book, which was you were talking about, I can't remember if you'd left your corporate job at this point or you were still sort of in it, but you said, believing it was my responsibility as a leader to set an example. And you were talking about doing all the overwork, you know, working so hard and having time for everyone else and all that sort of thing. And I think so many of us as women, like it's this belief, unconscious belief that we don't even know is there that we all have, because I'm guilty of doing it. Like, you know, I've been a solo parent on and off, and I'm always like, must have everything sorted and do all of the things and not let my children see me when I'm ready to pass out. Like,
yeah,
it's, there's this unconscious belief that we don't seem to ever challenge that we take on, and we take it into our workplaces and our homes and our families.
Yeah. And there's a level of, well, for me at least, I call myself a recovering perfectionist. You know, there's a level of somehow thinking I'm meant to do that all perfectly and get it all right. Yes. And that's, I mean, that's exhausting.
It really is
exhausting, hey? And it's such an old cliche, but that one of, you know, you get on the aeroplane and they say to you, if we have an accident, you know, put the mask on yourself before you put it on people, your kids or someone sitting around you.
Yeah.
And that's true. Yeah. It's absolutely fundamentally true. If you don't do that, you can't be of help to anybody else. And that is, for me, the greatest metaphor for life as women, because we do the opposite all the time. We are forever putting other people's needs ahead of our own. And I feel like I had to learn the hard way that I am a better mother, I am a better partner, I am a better leader, I'm a better friend and colleague when I look after myself first, not even second or third, but first. And so I need to be really clear on, you know, what is the self-care or the well-being that I need to have on a weekly basis, sometimes on a daily basis, but let's just be kind to ourselves, on a weekly basis that makes me the best at what I am. And we all deep down know that. We all know that if we get, and it's a little bit different for all of us, I think, you know, for some of us, I mean, there's some basics that we all kind of learn about in terms of the science around sleep now and movement and water. And so there's some basics, but some of us might need more exercise or less exercise. Some of us might need more stillness. You know, for me, one of the greatest things for my nervous system and my being and sense of self is to get in the ocean. And I'm lucky that I kind of live near the beach. And so I think the first thing we need to do is be really clear. What do I need on a weekly basis for me to be operating at my best? And then we've got to prioritize that.
Mm.
And even if it means our child or children need to sit in front of a television for half an hour, you know, like all the things that we say we don't want them to do, less screen time, et cetera. It's like, well, if they need some screen time so that I can get my needs met for a period of time, then I need to do that. And if I need to say to my husband, hey, this day or that day, I need you to do this so that I can do this, then we need to find our voice to do that. And so again, but you know, your point, this is so societally ingrained in us, and that's not a reason for us not to change it.
Mm. Oh, I completely agree with you. I think that's an important reason why we should change it. Because it's just, you know, it's something that is just there that we don't realize until we start having these kinds of conversations.
Yeah. And there are so many of those old beliefs and expectations that we either grew up in our family and watched our parents play out, or our grandparents play out, or you know, the society or the messages we got at school as young women and girls. You know, there are so many of those. And, you know, a big part of the work I always begin with my clients is, how do we get really clear? Well, let's get really clear on what is running you, what is driving you, what are the old beliefs and assumptions that are often very unconscious, as you said earlier. And the more we bring them into the light, the less power they have over us.
Mm. So this kind of brings us into the next thing I wanted to talk about, which is boundaries, because I know that can be a very loaded thing for women. Mm. Because, well, for various reasons. But another thing that I picked up from the book that you said, and you actually commented on this thought yourself in the book, was when I began to set new boundaries, I got more in touch with my anger.
Mm.
Can you tell us a bit more about that? Because I read that and I was like, yes, I experienced that, but I hadn't consciously put it, I hadn't consciously sort of examined it a bit more. So tell us a bit more about that.
So anger often tells us when our boundaries have either been crossed by someone else or when we have crossed our own boundaries. So we start to feel this resentment, and I'll use a resentment as an example. So, you know, if we are saying yes to everybody and doing everything and you know, someone asks us to do something, we're like, yeah, okay, I'll do it, because we don't know how to say no. We're a bit boundaryless around yes and no. Then often what we will find over time is the kind of the resentment or the anger grows. Now, as women, we have, and I generalize here because not everyone's the same, we've often been told to shut that anger down. We shove it down because that then we, you know, we'll come across as aggressive or defensive or, and I think often when we start practicing boundaries, we can come across that way. In fact, I think our boundaries can often feel like walls when we first start to practice them. It's like, no way, that is my boundary. You've crossed my boundary. And, you know, walls and boundaries are very different things. Boundaries are very, very, boundaries are flexible and they are personal, and everybody has a different boundary or way that, you know, whether it's around physical touch or whether it's around how someone speaks to us, what's kind of what's okay and not okay for me might be different to what's okay and what's not okay for you. But it's really important that you and I individually get clear on what is okay and what isn't okay for us. And in my experience, our anger tells us that. Our anger tells us a lot of, gives us a lot of wisdom. Now, that doesn't mean we can go and, or we need to go and dump our anger all over the place on other people, but we can. You know, someone once taught me that just that I put my hand on my heart and I put my hand on my tummy and I breathe into my anger. I welcome my anger in me. And with that, the more in touch I got with my anger, the more in touch I got with my boundaries. Now, the art of that, if you like, is, well, then how do you deliver that boundary? You know, how do you say that? But what I've noticed is the stronger I am in myself around it, the more gracefully I am able to say, hey, sorry, I can't do that today. I am flat out. Or I can't do it today, but I can do it next week. Or, you know, in the book around boundaries, I invite people to, whenever anyone asks you to do something, say, can I get back to you on that? So you can actually go away and think about that before you say either yes or no within that. Anger is a real gift. It helps us find, I think, an inner strength that we need to respect ourselves, which is ultimately what boundaries are, us respecting ourselves and us respecting others, so not crossing other people's boundaries by giving them advice or telling them what to do. I too was really surprised, because I had previously been very scared of my anger. You know, what will that anger look like if I unleash it? But the more we suppress it, the unhealthier it is for us and for those around us.
Absolutely. There was something else in your book that you mentioned, and it was back sort of in the realms of self-care. And you talked about, and I found this really interesting because I'm like, yes, I can definitely see myself doing that. So you're talking about fight, flight, and freeze. But then you also said this extra bit called tend and befriend.
Yeah.
Please tell us more.
Yeah, when I found that one out, I was like, oh God, that is so me.
Yes.
When I mean, years ago now, they used to call me Joe Therapist, and this is before I'd done any training in the realm, because I was forever helping other people out with their problems and getting way too involved in other people's lives. And it was, they call it, I think the technical name, for want of a better term, is FAWN. So it's fight, flee, freeze, fight, freeze, fight, flight, or
Right.
fawn. And which is basically that fawning is a really good way of describing it, I think. It is a kind of a trying to please a lot of people, or trying to focus on other people's problems rather than being with our own. Because bear in mind that we're triggered. If we've gone into one of those four, we're triggered. So something's happened. Our nervous system, something out of our past has come up, and we are at in the end we're scared. Yeah. And in that scaredness, in that fear, in that anxiety, we are either going to come back fighting, or we're going to come back fleeing. So we're going to avoid it. We're out of here. Or we go into that kind of freeze response, where we kind of just stand there and zombie out a bit, numb out a bit. The fawn goes into trying to make everything okay. Oh, okay, no worries. Yep, okay, yep. Or let me fix that for you. Or how can I? And it's again, a nervous system response to try to help. All of them a nervous system response to try and help us feel safe again in the world. But that's a powerful one. Again, I talk about it a lot in the book, that I spent so much time focusing on things outside of myself, including other people and other relationships. And I just move away from myself. And so learning to come back to myself and recognizing that I am triggered, that I am feeling anxious or nervous about something that's happened, allows me to kind of process that and to show up more genuinely in my relationships. What did it, when you read it, what did it bring up in you? Where did you notice that in you?
Well, it was from what you said, it aligns with what you said. It was an almost like an avoidance technique.
Yeah.
Me, it's like, oh, stuff going on. Oh, but my poor friend is struggling. So instead of taking, slowing down, taking the time to open the space to perhaps feel the feelings I don't necessarily want to have to feel and deal with, I'm going to throw everything at helping this friend or at helping a colleague out because they're drowning in this project. Or,
Yeah.
it's one of the things that was just a line in your book, and it just sent me off on this whole mind spin. But yeah, it's one of the things that I would do that would go against doing the self-care things that I needed to do. So it would just build up the or empty my cup, I suppose, at a
Yeah.
time when I really needed to be giving myself more. But it was like, oh, this, I don't know about this. I'll quite happily just go and focus on this and help everyone instead of helping
And
myself.
it feels good. Yeah, we get a bit of a hit in that.
Yes.
We feel validated and valued, and oh, we're a good person. And
Yes.
I'm not saying all of that's not genuine, but I really loved what you said, because I think that's at the core of it, is what am I avoiding? Yeah, what am I? And it's the same when we're really busy, and it's the same. I see so many people working really, really hard when they have stuff going on in their relationship and they just don't want to focus on it. So they work really, really hard. And it looks good and it feels good. And I get the validation and I get the achievement buzz. But actually, I'm avoiding addressing something or being with the uncomfortable of what is going on at home, or whatever it is. Same when we've got sort of, I've got another client that's got a sick parent at the moment, and and she's working her guts. She's working so hard at the moment. And, she's slowly starting to understand and appreciate that part of the reason she's doing that is because she feels a level of control over there in her work at a time in her life where she feels so out of control because she can't stop what's happening to her parent. And so, all of this, and I talk about it a lot in the book, the self-compassion is really important. Oh wow, look at me, look what I'm doing, look at me running after this friend trying to save the day and avoid the kind of pain or heartache or fear or whatever it is that's going on in me. And let's come back to me, let's come back to what I need. Then I can help my friend if she actually needs it and asks for it. But let's start with what do I need?
So what is a good way of actually getting started in the whole redefining, what you want, what you need, kind of what we've been talking about? Because for me, it was a chronic illness and then divorce. I literally sat down and went,
I'll do it.
right, what do I want life to look like now that nothing is as it was? So
Isn't
if
it?
you don't want to go that far, if you'd like to just have a little kind of hiatus in life right now,
It
what's
choicefully.
good? Yeah.
Yeah, I'm with you, and I'm the same. It's like, why is it? And I think I sort of tell something along the lines of, the universe or whatever you believe will kind of tap you on the shoulder and say, maybe it's time to look at this and you
Yeah, or
sprain.
smack you in the head.
Yeah, well, but I think it gradually gets that way. It's like you sprain your ankle, or maybe it's time to slow down a little bit. But yes, for me, it seems that the house needs to be dropped on my head before I go, okay, something needs to change here. And my strong encouragement, like you're saying, is let's not get there. And again, I kind of take people through a bit of a process in the book around creating space for A, defining your values, because our values change over time. Yeah. They lot. Our values in our 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, they're changing often a lot. We might keep some core ones, but as we grow and evolve, so do our values. So firstly, what do I value? What is most important for me? The second one I talk about is purpose, so getting clear on purpose. And again, I am not talking, because I really hate it, this kind of big grandiose purpose. It's for me, purpose is about what is meaningful in my life, what brings me meaning in my life, and then how do I take that into all areas of my life. And then the third is, and again, I give a visioning exercise in the book. Take some time, and I do this every couple of years, unless something really big changes, and then I'll do it more frequent than that. But I literally go, and the question goes something like, if everything in my life exceeded my most optimistic expectations in, call it 3 or 5 years' time, what would my life be like? How would I be describing my life now, looking back? And not from a work perspective, although that can be included, but a whole of life perspective. And I think once we get really clear on our values and the vision for what life success looks like for us, then it is much easier to be conscious of the decisions we make on a daily basis that either align to that or don't align to that. And so, whether it's going away on retreat once a year, like whatever you need, getting your girlfriends together and doing it as a group in January at the beginning of the year, or December, in June, let's stop. Whatever it is that it takes that feels nurturing and nourishing to sit together. And it is lovely to do it in circle, like it is lovely to do it with a bunch of friends or with your partner and really think about where are we at? What are we doing? What is this life? Why are we doing life the way we're doing it? And the answer may be, we are well on track. This is good. No change required here. I'm yet to see many people that have it quite that simple. Like you, don't wait to get sick. Don't wait for the marriage to end. Don't wait for whatever it is, create space to be conscious of the choices that you're making.
I love your idea of doing it over January, getting together with a couple of friends. That sounds absolutely delightful to me.
Doesn't it? Yeah, totally.
That might become a new annual practice. I like that one.
Well, that's better than sort of setting goals or, it's just like, let's just kind of sit down and talk through what's really working in our lives, what's not working in our lives, and what can we do differently in that.
Fantastic. Thank you for the whole conversation, Jo. I really, really enjoyed it. Can you tell us if anyone listening is suddenly feeling a burning desire, which I really hope they are because it's a fabulous book, to get a hold of your book?
Thank you.
Where do they need to go? What do they need to do?
They can either go to my website, which is joewagstaff.com, and you can, there's a book page there where you can see all more information about the book, and you can go on to Amazon or Booktopia and buy the book, or they can go directly to Booktopia and Amazon and buy the book there.
And just tell us again, what's the book called?
Lead Like You: How Authenticity Transforms the Way Women Live, Love and Succeed.
Fantastic.
If you go to my website, as I mentioned, joewagstaff.com, you will also find a free mini workshop, which is focused on the reactive tendencies, which we've talked a bit about today, actually, that limit us in our career and our lives. And so it's quite a valuable little piece, and there's a workbook that goes with it for those that might be interested.
And do you have one final thought or takeaway that you would love to leave front and centre in our listeners' minds from this conversation?
I think it's probably something I said earlier, which is the quality of our future depends on the choices that we make now. So let's be really choiceful around what we do and don't do, where we put our energy and time, so that we are creating the future that is really meaningful for us.
Love it. Well, thank you so much for your time, Jo.
Oh, pleasure. I really enjoyed the conversation. Thank you.
Fantastic.
And just as a quick little side note for our regular listeners, we're going to be taking a 6-week break from WorkWife Wine Time, so we won't be publishing any episodes over the next 6 weeks because we've got some big changes coming. So we're just going to be working behind the scenes on getting that all ready for you. So we will catch up with you again in May. Thanks for tuning into our podcast. If you enjoyed it, hit subscribe. If you'd like to learn more, then check out our website, www.workwifewinetime.com.au. While you're there, jump on our mailing list to receive special updates and offers from our guests. Until next time, take care and drink responsibly.